days that Bill Adler had closed the middle door that went into the courtroom at that time. The courtroom has since been remodeled. It's not like I'm saying now. There was a middle door, double doors that you could go in, or you could go in from the side at single doors on either side. Everything is full, including jury box seats and everything. And the gentleman in charge of our meeting is now deceased, and that was Matt Holt. We had an agenda. Well, the Corps of Engineers took over and wouldn't let us proceed with what really was supposed to be done. It was the report to the people on their request. And the people from the southern end of the county were well represented. People got up and spoke, you know, their preference. But we did get enough accomplished that the people did wish the project and wished to proceed with it. And after that meeting, all they showed about the dam and the recreation and everything, and now one lady made a comment, and I don't know it exactly enough to tell it, but something about Santa Claus and Christmas. There's an old philosophy, something makes it look nice or something to that effect. I don't know all of it enough to quote it. But anyway, those engineers, never got to tickle that in my life. They couldn't stay in their seat, like they had ants in their pants or something, up and down the steps to the courthouse. And the most of their big shots did set up in the jury box. And all they could do was chew chewing gums. But if you asked them a question, they couldn't answer it. We'll have to find the answer, tell you later. We never did know. That's all they could do. And I can see them yet. Anyway, that took place. Well, it went on for 2 years more. But in the meantime, in 1973, in January, because the Soil Conservation Service was charged with the responsibility of putting this thing, you know, the plan of it, with what they needed to make a request in Washington, or first to the state, then in Washington. And of course, things they needed to know was things about people and farms and business places and all these things. So in January, the day that Lyndon Johnson's funeral, we began to do the counting, myself and other people in the watershed area, Clara May Spray, who is now president of the Watershed Association, Betty Jean Weimer, who is a teacher at Walkersville Junior High School, Glenn Clutter, who was also a teacher at Roanoke at the time, Mary C. is a member of the Watershed Association, March Butcher, who was a school teacher, and my husband, and we took the map of the county, of the that end of the county, and we blocked it off so that no one person would overstep the other's boundaries, and we counted. The area that I had was from Bendale Bridge, because the base of the dam and all is kind of parallel with the Bendale Bridge in Weston and Brownsville as you go up the other highway. That was my area to the intersection of the Vandalia Route 19 road. We counted the houses. If it was 3 acres or more, we counted it a farm. But you can count a farm as 1 acre. I looked up the definition of a farm to see what it says, and it says the cultivation of the soil for food and fiber for one's survival. Makes no difference if it's an acre or 1,000 acres. Well, that is the definition we went by. Okay, we counted the people, the homes, if it was a farm, if it was the business place, whatever, each household. And if we didn't know the numbers in those households, we called them if we could, or got in touch some way to know how many people lived in that household. And if it was things saying it's like the Walkersville Fire Department, or the IOOF Lodge at Walkersville, something, you know, that didn't fall into other categories, we listed them separately, like the Horner Game Reserve, and the bus garage at the Roanoke School, things like that. We counted schools, we counted churches, counted cemeteries, everything like that. We came up with great more numbers. We came up with 1,800 plus in the Stonewall Jackson Lake area, where the Corps said it was only around 600 at the time.
You did a sort of a profile of the community.
We did everything. We tried not to leave anything unturned. There was just a few places it was not able to learn the numbers per household, and we would say unknown, but we tried to give a little estimate and give or take. Well, that was in 1973. We turned all that into the Soil Conservation Service, and it went into the original plan, request for the watershed project. There are something over 675. I may be a little confused there. I wish I'd brought that with me. The original copies of these studies are available with the Watershed Association. But we did all that. Well, 1973, we done a lot of this. Being, what would be involved? Who'd be affected? See, the Western End was also analyzed, as well as our end, to see, you know, the cost-benefit ratio. Whether or not it's practical and so forth and all. And, well, we had all that together. Time to report to the people again. Don't want to go back to Weston. It was messed up once. Where could we meet in the lower end of the county? Not at the Roanoke School, because the Board of Education was in support of the Big Dam. Well, we eliminated Roanoke School. We had to have some place with a large enough area for the people. So I don't know how we had met and gone over the plan as put together, which was a draft. So we thought we'd give us some thought. I forget the date that was. It was in January. It must have been about 6th, 7th, or 8th. And in the evening, after that particular meeting, after we had gone home in the evening, Ron Fowler called at our home, and he says, I have secured the Roanoke, or the Vandalia Community Building for the meeting. I said, how'd you do it? Well, he says, makes no difference. We've got it. Okay. The meeting was set for the 10th of January. We did not publicize us. We just got on the phone. And believe me, what a crowd. That night, we made our report to the people. But we also knew we may need to organize so that we could do our work more effective and all. And there was going to be a number of things we need to do that would be transpire. So what happened there that night, we ended up being, while we are the Upper West Fork River Watershed Association, we are also the fighters of the Stonewall Jackson Dam. Now, at first, we just had an Upper West Fork Watershed Association. Well, all of a sudden, in the news media, became this other watershed, and we thought, oh, we're gaining, because it had been put on the shelf. But upon investigation, found out it wasn't ours. It's another one in, it's either Calhoun or Gilmer County. So we had to change ours a little bit. Upper West Fork River. I had to put a word in. Well, anyway, this first night, this first meeting, and oh, the spirits were high, and oh, everybody just a real good feeling. Things were beginning to fall in place a little bit. And so we elected our officers. Kenneth Parker was our president, with Clara May Spray as our secretary. Mary C. was our treasurer. Let's see.
That was all in the fact.
I think it was. But that started on the 10th of January of 1974. Pouring down the rain. Now, I've got to back up and tell you about this on the night of the 15th of December back in Weston when the Corps of Engineers. We had not had any snow till that particular evening and night. Oh, going home, going up Brush Run Hill on the western side of it, there was a cinder truck in front of us, and if he hadn't pulled over, we never would have made it up that hill. I never seen such a night. It was a slick as all outdoors. The next morning, I called many of the people in that end of the county to know if they made it home all right. None of us had no business out. Likewise, in the night we organized, So I said, these things, you know, we must be working in the right direction, because the Lord took care of everyone. No one had any accidents, no problems, no nothing. And if the group in Weston had been knowing, or had known, that we were organizing, I expect they would have killed every last one of us. Because it was just pouring down the rain, the waters were up a little in Weston. Well, that was then. Well, since then, there's been so much. It would be a volume, all right, or two, three, more. But we covered a lot of ground. I've had many more messages. I've also had messages that it will break. And in the last two or three years, I've learned of other people who have also had the same message, including just this past Saturday night. A lady called me Sunday afternoon. She said, I just had to call you. She said, I was so tired. She works at Western State Hospital. And she said, I was so tired and so sleepy. She said, I wasn't even thinking about the dam when I laid down to go to sleep. But she said in the middle of the night, this knowledge came to her and she was supposedly to be at work, and said, oh, it's coming at such force, and she was so concerned about her patients. You won't have time to get the patients out. There is no time. It's such force. And she said it woke her up, and she could not go back to sleep Saturday night. Well, that runs parallel, and I don't know who the gentleman is, with the exception of a Mr. McHugh that I learned about just a couple months ago, just about this time, a couple months ago, by the name of McHugh. First name I do not know. But in the story is that he was very ill, days or just a matter of time till his passing. He hadn't been able to speak but very little, word now and then, and it wasn't hardly understandable to his family or whoever was with him. But all at once, out of a clear blue sky, very distinct words, very clear, could be understood and all, he said, go south. His sister was sitting with him at his bedside. Go south. She says, what? He said, go south. She said, what? He said, go south. Get, for God's sake, get out of the dam area. Go south. She said, but why south? He said, I see lots of water. Lots of water. Oh, yes, she said, it's to be a large dam. No, it's not in a dam. Oh, I feel so sorry for those people. Yes, she said, it's been sad, and we all feel sorry for everyone that's had to leave their homes and go elsewhere and give up everything. No, not those. Oh, those people, I feel so sorry. That water, so much, so rapid. Apparently, he had had the vision and the knowledge that it had broken or something. And when he had spoken those words, passed on very quietly. Mm. That was his last words to his sister that was sitting with him. And this had been was told by a lady who worked for that family just this fall. Well, now to go back to, I've had similar knowledge along that line that will break. Our own Congressman Robert Conley in Lewis County has also had knowledge given to him with the vision that he saw. Huge cracks, he said, indescribable. The force, indescribable, in our language. And, of course, the effect, and, you know, when God gives a knowledge, and one thing you can go on, you know, you better give it a little thought. Because the Bible teaches us that God doesn't lie. Whatever God has spoken, you can believe. And if he makes a promise, you can be rest assured he delivers on promises. Sometime or another. Maybe not always right when we'd like, but somewhere down the line. So that's why I know that we must give thought to these things. It's serious. And I know that that is something we have to work on and work on now. We can't let any time go by and not. Okay, to go back for the 1975, to pick up with the knowledge given to me in 1972 on the 4th of December concerning our anniversary and things. In 1975, my husband began not to feel very well. Well, I tried to get him to go to a doctor, and he wouldn't. Very stubborn in that respect, because he had never been ill in his life. Finally, he was beginning to be uncomfortable enough and not well enough. He did decide to go to a doctor. So then they wanted to admit him into the hospital. This was 28th of July, 1975. Could not determine what was wrong, or they thought they could see something in x-ray, still couldn't determine. So the 8th of August, 1975, they scheduled exploratory surgery. Then provided the answers of what I had known 2.5 years before, that he did have cancer. It verified it. Now, he lived 2 years and 3 or 4 months later before he passed away. Well, that answered that. But now, where it come into the anniversary, that year was our 14th anniversary. And it meant that it would be before our 19th. That 5 years. It meant that 5 years, if you add the 1 and 4, the date of our anniversary, you get 5 years. 5 years from the date that I had the knowledge is when he passed away, or approximately, so in the fall. That was what that meant, the anniversary. That would be the 5 years. And it would be before our anniversary in the fifth year. But I didn't know that till after things took place. I had also known in April of 1977, I spoke about being requested to go to Georgia to a Northeast area meeting. I was supposed to speak there on the 9th day of February, 1977, but in the meantime, my husband had to go back into the hospital for more surgery. He went back into the hospital on 1st February, and I didn't get to go to Georgia. But I sent my speech I was to give to a lady who was the secretary of the tri-district, or the president of the tri-district, and asked her if she was not already committed in an area, because she was on the national committee in some respects, if she wasn't already committed, for her to deliver it for me, or if she was committed to get our state president of the Ladies Auxiliary to deliver it. So that's what happened. That speech, there was over 1,000 copies of it made at that national meeting and distributed to people all over the United States. And that took place then. That was one of the things I didn't get to do. He had this surgery the 1st of February, first part of it. In March, there was a hearing held at the Lewis County High School concerning the dam, you know. Governor Rockefeller had made it appear as if he would like to hear the pros and cons, and then he would make a decision about the dam. See, before he went into office, the Watershed Association had requested of Governor Archmore not to sign the recreational agreement between the state of West Virginia and the Army Corps of Engineers. And he did not sign it, because West Virginia really cannot afford it to begin with. See, all along, too, I'm beginning to learn why it's not God's will. All these various things in perspective. Good farmland, cost, lives, everything. And that was in... lost my thought there for a moment.
That you were talking about Governor Rockefeller.
That's right. Okay. On the 19th of March, 1977, we held this meeting in Weston, the pros and the cons, the ones for it and the ones against it. My husband was one of the speakers of the opposition, representing the West Fork District and what had been requested. Many people were kind of surprised to see my husband on a stand, because he's supposed to be, you know, bad ill. But you couldn't hold him down. And I wouldn't have wanted to. I'm glad he kept going and enjoyed life and coped with it. He had it licked at one point. He astonished the doctors till their mouths dropped open. Wouldn't know what I had done to him. I said, I didn't do it. The man upstairs did. They even called him into the doctor's meetings. They wanted to observe him, study his whole case. It was astonishing. And anyway, on the 28th day of March, after Rockefeller had met in Weston, but somehow, just so you have a little square, on one hand, I hoped, you know, that it would come out okay, and on the right down here in the corner, there's a question mark. My square is not complete. 28th day, but he's supposed to make it on the 28th, but he made it on the 27th, or maybe he's supposed to make it on the 29th and made it on the 28th. He announced that the dam would go forth. Oh, I tell you. Not only my husband, but everybody else, just as angry could be to bite 10-penny nails, so to speak. That was on a Monday. He was to go on Wednesday for his treatments. He took chemotherapy. And when he went into the hospital, he was still so far up in the air and still so angry that the doctors thought that he was becoming much worse. And right into the hospital they put him. For 25 days, not once did I ever get to talk with the doctor. I tried, but I couldn't. And on this one, they were giving him shots every day. He didn't know what for. In fact, in the meantime, Bobby had fallen at school, had broken his tailbone. Well, I had told my husband I was going to take him to the doctor. I was making arrangements to get back in town in time when he got out of school. I could take him to the doctor to know what had happened. And my husband had called me from the hospital the night before, and I told him, you know, Bobby had fallen. I said, if he isn't any better in my morning, I'll take him to the doctor in my afternoon after I come back from the hospital. See, I went to the hospital every day. Over the 2.5 years, in the hospital 84 days, and I only missed 4 days of not getting to go because of the weather. Otherwise, I didn't went, or I wouldn't have known how he was. Well, anyway, While he was talking with me on this night before, the nurse came in and gave him a shot in the shoulder, but he didn't know what they were for. Well, now I went to the hospital the next day. He didn't remember having talked with me to tell him that I had taken Bobby to the doctor. And I told him the outcome and all. He didn't remember it. Well, finally, I thought, I'm going to track that doctor down. So I seen him a-coming. I followed him and right into his office I went. I wonder what was going on. Why he couldn't go home. I couldn't see that he was all that much worse or anything, you know. Only thing is, he was becoming confused. He couldn't seem to remember things from day to day. Well, what it was, they were giving him shots like they do older people that are, I don't know if I can describe it exactly or not, but they're losing their mind and they got a lot of fantasies and all these things. And he said, he is so ill, he's got a lot of imaginations and all these things. I said, like what? He says, well, he's got it in his mind that the government's going to take everything away from him. I said, what do you mean? Well, he said he's got some strange imagination that he's going to lose everything. He's not going to have any home. He's not going to have any place to live and all these things. I said, are you by any chance speaking of Stonewall Jackson Dam? Oh, he said he says something about that. He said, we give him these shots to quiet him down, hold him down. I said, if that's the case, you've got 1,800 more of us to treat. And I walked out. I was so mad. He started to take a hold of me and I didn't let him. Well, on the next day, this was on a Friday, the next day I had a tri-district ladies' auxiliary meeting, being secretary treasurer, and I wasn't very happy, wasn't in very good mood to go. I might have been better off in one respect to have stayed at home. On the other hand, I went and I was among friends, support, and one lady said to me, she said, boy, if he says anything about it again, I'd tell him to talk with my lawyer. Well, I had it in my mind, that's what I was going to do. But when I went back to the hospital on the Tuesday, and I went to my husband's room. He said, you go down to the dispense and get my clothes. I said, why? He said, I'm going home. Boy, I didn't ask any questions. I got out of there. We just did. But now, it had damaged him that he wouldn't have been able to have coped. He wouldn't have been able to. And even it's hard for me now because I have been ill too for the last. And that comes because of some things I tried to do and I shouldn't have. But along with that, while he was in there, they went and done another surgery that one doctor told me there was no need for that surgery. But the one doctor thought he was so bad, oh, he was going to do the surgery whether or not. And one doctor called me in the late hour of the night and said, you come on down and see if you can talk with him and reason with him, because said he's not in need of that surgery. And he said if he has it, he may not live 6 months. Well, I went down. Well, I tried to talk with him. But my mother thought he knew more about it than I did. She didn't know the doctor had talked with me because I couldn't really share everything with my mother like I needed to. And she said, well, you don't know what he went through overseas or anything. You just stay out of it. It's none of your concern. Here I am a wife. I'm being told to stay out of it. Well, that really hurt. Now, he had the surgery. And I cried all the way home. And in that respect, because I didn't gain. He had the surgery. But that particular night, I had this vision that it seemed like we were at a funeral home, and here he was in this casket. And all at once he raises up, I'm not ready to go yet. But something else said, I will in the fall. But he wasn't ready to go yet. Summer of 1957, the tri-district tour we always took every year. 77. The tri-district always took a tour, an educational tour, with a little pleasure mixed in. Anywhere in the state that was something worthwhile, to learn something new, see something new, and everything. Well, we went to Wirt and Steele that year, and he toured all the way through it. He took care of all his responsibilities as conservation district supervisor. In fact, the night before he died, he was still planning. This was on a Tuesday night, and it was his plans to go to his district meeting on Friday. He'd have his treatment on Thursday. He'd go to his meeting on Friday. And he had a colostomy, and consequently, then he had no other control over bowel, so that his clothes, he could go about his work or anything he wanted to do and not feel uncomfortable or embarrassed. I got these bed liners. I cut them in two, and we lined his underclothes with them. He could go ahead about things, no worries. Now he took care of all his responsibilities in that respect. But sure enough, in the fall, October the 11th, 1977 is when he passed away. Well, I'm telling you these because I've had enough of these, and I am not a psychic. I don't believe I fall in that category, like Jean Dixon. She's something else, I do believe. But everything I've ever known has been true. In July of 1979, I received knowledge that my mother had cancer. Well, I tried to get her to go to a doctor because she was always complaining. She would go. She said she didn't have time or she couldn't afford it or this or that. Some excuse that she couldn't go. Well, in October, and it was just right after our Skin Creek Farm Craft Festival, that's the last place my mother was able to go out in the car. She didn't get out of the car, so I left the booth that I had to go up and talk with her. And, oh, she looked like she had been through a knot hole. In fact, a car bumped us that afternoon, and she thought I had done it. Along the highway, a car bumped. No damage or anything, just bumped. But she thought I had done the bumping. That was on the 30th of September of 79. On the 3rd of October, she was bad enough. Dad told her she had to go to the doctor. Well, when she went, he put her in the hospital. But it was not until the 21st of October they finally done a biopsy on her. And then determined that she did have cancer of the liver. See, I knew she had the cancer, but I didn't know of what nature. And then she passed away in December of 79, 21st day of December. I've known that. I have to think for a little bit now. Yeah, rest a little bit.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. What was the subject of that?
Soil Stewardship Week in Lewis County. How do we get it accomplished in life? In fact, I still have a copy of it somewhere. I made several copies. It took me 3 weeks or better to know how to even begin.
That's the hardest part.
That was the hardest part was my opening statement because I knew that was the most important. One night while I was sleeping, and you know, I got up and wrote it down. From then on, the rest of it fell in place. Cooperation, communication. There's three keys. Cooperation, communication.
The American farmer.
You begin your FFA years on this.
My FFA years really started in 1972. I'd go around and help my dad out in the garden and in the nursery. And I sometimes helped dig the trees. Learn how to use the lawnmower and the tiller. Then after he got sick, that was when I took over the rope and done a lot and help him out. And I'd serve customers and learn how to do on the trees. And after he passed away, then I took over full time. And with the FFA, that sort of helped out a lot.
You said the dam project had deprived you of a degree? What did you mean by that?
American Farmer degree.
The highest degree that
you can get. Highest degree of all in the FFA. This was in 1981 that happened.
1980.
81 is when I tried for the American Farmer.
I know, but now here's. He became disqualified. He was telling you there he was going to go to. He went to Kansas City as a part of his overall achievement. It's called the Proficiency Award Program.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, he had all these awards from the very beginning in FFA. He always sweeped the county.
But
his granddad always told him he ought to be ashamed of himself. He got all the awards and all others were sort of left behind, you know. But then at the same time, they had the same right and privilege to try for the same things.
Unfortunately, in 1980 in the spring, while serving a customer, I suffered a leg injury, a dislocated kneecap, laid me up for the greater part of the year. Wasn't really able to work until the following spring, and still I had to be careful.
What was it about the dam that caused you to miss that year?
had to be an established farmer.
Well, that's why I was going to try to help you there, too.
He
won this regional award in 1980. Mm-hmm. He left for Kansas City on the morning of the 9th of November, about 3 o'clock in the morning. He arrived in Kansas City the next day or next night. By the time he called me from Kansas City...
On Sunday night.
You got there on Sunday?
Monday night.
Monday night. By the time he called me on Monday night to let me know they were in Kansas City okay and everything, they had already delivered the condemnation papers to us. That is the first knowledge. 2 years prior to that, they had hassled me about another man's property. But I wouldn't deal with them on that. But while I was getting that on Bobby's angle of it, while he was there, it had already been condemned on the 23rd of October, had no knowledge of it until the 10th of November. Well, I didn't tell Bobby until he came home on the 16th. I didn't want to ruin his trip.
We got there.
But now here's what
night.
Disqualified him. He had to be out of high school 1 year before he could even apply for his American Farmer degree, which would have made it in the fall of 1980. That he would have been come. See, it's determined by the National Convention, which is held in November. In November 1980, he would be out of school 1 year and could apply in 81 for his American Farmer degree. But by their having condemned it, that was the one factor that disqualified him.
Because he no longer
everything
had
else he qualified.
A farm of his own. Mm.
So, when we got to Kansas City that night, we had a devotional time where each of us read something from the Bible or told us of our problems. And I was telling them about the issue of the dam, and we had a prayer on it.
They had a lady.
Unaware that over 1,000 miles away back home that my farm was now in the ownership of the Corps.
How they come to have this prayer? There were one of the advisors
from
another
Barbara
chapter
County.
In the state who is a minister. And this was just her way, you know, of associating with the young people. And I was right proud of that factor. Because FFA does have high moral values in that respect. And that's how they got into the subject.
So, in October 81...
of 1980, it's when they condemned it.
Oh, in 1980.
And we had no knowledge of it whatsoever until the 10th of November.
How did the condemnation work? How did
Well, condemnation is supposed to be this way. Condemnation is not supposed to take place until after the two parties cannot agree upon compensation for a property. That is, according, it's either 91 or 92, law 91, 92, 646. Now, as I started to tell you there a little bit ago, they had harassed me for 2 years about a piece of property that belonged to one of my neighbors. For some reason or another, out of his big farm, they had just there's just like a square in one corner of 20 acres. Maybe because it had at one time belonged to Hebner people, a great uncle of my husband's. But they wanted me to sign papers for them to go in on that piece. See, when they told me who the boundaries were of that particular farm, I knew it wasn't mine. And I wouldn't deal with them. I wouldn't even give them an answer that satisfied them. But in 1978, it was October 29th, 30th, and 31st. For some reason or another, our telephone was out of order, with the exception of 10 minutes till 9 each morning. Now, this is interesting. We could not call out. We had to go to a neighbor. Stephen called down to my mother and dad's or anywhere else that I needed to. No one could call in. But each morning, 10 minutes till 9, that this man called. He tried to tell me he was with the gas company. I found out later he was not with the gas company. Because I know gas company personnel too very well that I can ask somebody and I know they'll let me know. The second morning, he said, is it okay? He said, I could just show you some maps and papers, and I can convince you it's your property.
On Saturday, it was a very snowy day. We had just gotten back from town from getting groceries, and the phone rang. And somebody told me I had been selected the FFA Student of the Month, and I didn't know what it was, so I just went ahead and got dressed and more presentable.
Official dress. Here's official dress.
And that time came and nobody showed up. And
said it was personnel from the TV station. And I said, is it Mark, wasn't it, or Mac?
Was Mark Walsh.
Anyway, there was one of the gentlemen. I had always been on television many a time, but I knew the personnel, and I said, is that you?
Like Peter Visser is now, Channel 5.
He wouldn't give me any name. And I said, well, for you to get your equipment to our house, it's going to be a little hard, because I said, to bring your vehicle up around the road, it won't be very good. I said, you'll have to carry everything up the hill. I said, he said, that won't be no problem. So I knew, you know, this interview might need be part. I said, well, do you want an interview outside or inside? So I'd know what to do. And, well, we'll decide that when we get there. So I knew my living room needed a little tidying up. Outdoors, there was some, we had a trash barrel, but the winds was always blowing things out, you know, and scattered. So between Bobby and my dad, they straightened up outside a little bit. And we all got presentable, and time come and gone. Well, in fact, closer as time rolled around, and my mother said, do you think Bobby would do better if we weren't here? And I said, oh, possible. So they decided they'd go home. They had come to give Bobby a haircut. My dad always cut his hair. And being on a Saturday, we had gone to get groceries, and Mother said, whenever you're ready to leave town, she said, give us a call, and we'll start from home. And we got there just about the same time. And we had no more guy in the door till this call came. So I said, well, he might do better, you know. I thought he might be a little tense if Grandmother was watching him, and she could always make remarks in the wrong time, the wrong places. She's quite known for that. Anyway, they went on home.
I hope you never had a grandmother like that would just harass you.
And anyway, 5 o'clock come and gone, no one. Longer it went, the longer I began to wonder. So I called the TV station. Father answered, and I said, do you know anything about, I supposed to be an interview with Robert Heavener this afternoon, 5 o'clock? No. Well, I tried, Bobby kept wanting to call his advisor, you know, and my mother said, oh, well, now he knows all about it, you don't need to bother him. Well, it was getting dark. Then I began to get a little leery. So I tried to get a hold of his advisor. No answer at his advisor's home, not even his wife. And on, so I thought, well, I'll call his son and see, maybe he's just away momentarily and he'll be back in a little while. Well, I found out from his son he was out of town for the weekend. Well, I knew one thing, too. This is what made me begin to wonder. I knew one thing, too, that if a student were in line for an achievement or an honor or anything, advisor always knew, and somehow or another he'd share it, you know, with the family, even though it was to be a surprise to the student. And after I learned the advisor was out of town in Kingwood for the weekend, that made me a little bit more. So I called the TV station back again and asked some questions. And I told this. I asked who I was talking with. He told me. And I said, well, I have reason for wanting to know. I said, is it possible you can get in touch with the management of the station and learn if there was to be an interview and for some reason or another maybe could not be? So he did, and he called me back. No answer. Or, I mean, nothing. They had no knowledge of any interviews by any of the personnel. That really worried me some more. So I didn't do a thing but turn around and call the principal of the high school. And I caught him in the midst of some kind of a evening's event, 15, 20 or more persons. But I apologized. His daughter answered and said he's busy. And I said, well, if he can, please ask him to come to the phone. This is urgent. And I told him what had taken place. I said, are you aware that Bobby is in order for any award or anything and any program set up? Because usually the office knows too a little bit. He said, no. But not too long before that, Mr. Sigriano in Weston had an experience where people had said they were coming there to check out his gas lines in the evening hours. When they arrived, they robbed him and beat him up and everything. So Mr. The principal of the high school at that time, Mr. Kinzer, that come to mind, he said, I would advise you to get in touch with the sheriff's department. I said, if that is your advisement and your advice, I said, I will do so. So I did. They put surveillance on us for 72 hours. During the night, I had knowledge who was responsible. It took me a few days to bear it out.
It was the president.
But then I went into the high school on Monday to inform his advisor what had taken place. Called him in from lunch. He didn't like that very well, but then after he learned everything, he a little bit more understanding.
Damn jackass.
But he said, too, one thing that helped. All awards are given at one time, unless it's a very special award. All awards are given at the time of the parent member banquet. I was aware of the FFA program well enough. I thought, well, I've never heard of this Student of the Month before. I asked him, I said, well, who else has ever gotten this particular recognition? No one. Couldn't understand what it was all about or anything. It was all a hoax. Somehow I kind of wondered, maybe the Corps was in on that too. I can't prove it, but I've often wondered.
But the president was there.
But now, getting back to this other phone call I was telling you about, the three mornings in a row, the second morning, he said, oh, he said, if I can just show you some maps and all and papers, he said, you'll know it's your property. He said, can I come out to your place this afternoon? Oh, I said, you can come, but it won't do you any good. Well, we had to be digging potatoes around our hillside where we got a bird's eye view of the whole community. There was a Corps of Engineer vehicle came in just off of the road at a house just off of the main highway before you get to our place a little ways and sat there all afternoon. Not a soul around our place. No one. The next morning, 9:05 to call. I was to your place yesterday and there wasn't anyone at home. I said, you weren't at our place. But I never let him know I knew there was a vehicle in the area. I said, you weren't at our place. Oh, yes, I was, and I waited all afternoon for you. So at that time, I was really getting hot under the collar. I said, my advice to you is do your homework and get in touch with the right persons and leave me alone. He said, do you have an attorney? I said, well, it's none of your business. I was really getting and all this, you know. And I hung up on him. By evening, we had our phone service. No service any other hour of the day for 3 days, with that one exception, each day. Now, I have even been suspicious from about the first part of September this year until the day of that they taken us out abruptly as they did, that my line's been tapped. And I'll say why. We only had one other party on the line, most cooperative, very nice. If they needed the line, they said so or anything. If they picked up, you know, it was busy. Never interruption or bother. And every time I'd ever talked to anyone, made no difference who it was, I could hear something. It was most unusual on the line in that respect. Now, let's see. I need to go back to... Where did I leave off there before?
We were talking about condemnation. We were talking about the process of how a place is condemned. Yeah. You said it has to be after both parties have...
Oh, yeah. Back in 1978, when they first began hassling me on this other piece of property, while Bobby was still in school, and on one afternoon, about 3 o'clock, because I thought, well, Bobby will be home from school another half hour, I'm just going to rest, because when he got in, then we both worked together. And... about that time, I seen a vehicle come up around, and I could tell it had a Corps of Engineer emblem on the door. So my prayers were in order. And this fellow walked in on the walk, back walk. At first, I didn't go out the door. I did go out the door, but I held on. But one thing, we have a part collie, part Labrador retriever dog. And that dog growled all the time this person was there. But he only came as close into the house as I'd say 25 feet. And he did not identify himself. He had some papers. He asked if Willard Hefner was there. Hefner, he called it. I said, how do you spell it? H-E-A-T-H-N-E-R. Never did hear it spelled that way, even though it is spelled 3 different ways.
Heathen.
I said, no, he isn't. Yeah, I don't care for him. I said, no, he isn't. I said, he's deceased. Well, when do you expect him back? Well, I said that would be a great miracle, you know, if that ever took place. When do you expect him back? I said, well, I don't. Well, when do you expect to see him again? I said, when I get to heaven. I suppose he thought, you know, that was smart aleck or something. And he said, well, he said, since you won't tell me when he'll be back, I'm just going to sit down here and wait a while. I said, well, you'll be waiting for a great long while. And I said, I don't imagine you'll ever be fortunate enough to get to see him. I said, by the way, who are you anyhow? That doesn't make any difference. Doesn't matter. I said, in that case, I said, you get right back down that road as fast as you came up, and I mean PDQ. He left.
In September, that same
But
year.
By the dog growling, kind of scared me. I've always heard that dogs can sense danger. So I held on to the door. And maybe I shouldn't have gone out on the step, but that's as far as I went. It was just the first step right out the door. And I didn't go any further. But when he would not identify himself after the third time I asked him, then I thought he'd better be gone.
September that same year, one of the Corps came around almost knocked my granddad down.
That was in September 79.
We'd just been out to pick apples. We was going to get some to their festival that was happening. We'd just coming in for a break and have lunch because granddad was coming. We was going to work together that afternoon. And I got to the house there and saw Grandpa coming and another guy there. And I asked him who he was, and he said it was the Corps Engineers Inspector. Then I came back out the pathway and told her about it.
I don't go as fast as he does. Grandma always brings up the rear, they say.
He came out to the coal pile there, and then we told him to get the H-E-double-L out, excuse the expression. And boy, he took out there like a madman.
I was a good 250 feet away from the man. I could not tell you what he looked like. I couldn't even tell you what color of the clothing or anything, or who he was or anything. I couldn't have conversed with him that far apart. And I was taking my time going out the path. I didn't drive up because I saw no point in just driving up around the house just to go right back again. And I could walk up. When I got up to the house, and I said to my dad, where did he go? He said, I don't know. He said he went down around that way. I went to the front yard. I looked everywhere. And I said, well, where was he parked? Well, when I guess Dad had been arriving. And Dad said just as he parked his car, this vehicle come in, turned and come back and parked in on the other side of the mailbox from where he was, and took off up the hill in front of me and said just about two or three different places very near knocked him down.